Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can email them to me at bonkay@aol.com. I'll be happy to address them with my guest tonight. And before I introduce her, I'd just like to make a couple of announcements. First, I really am so sorry I had to cancel our show for last week. I am recovering from the flu. I am doing better, as many of you have sent me wonderful wishes, and I appreciate it. Still not quite there, so I'll try not to choke on tonight's broadcast. But I do appreciate the sentiments. Unfortunately, I had to postpone our appearance from Dr. Margalis Fjellstad, and she will be joining us in February, and we always love having her as a guest talking about how to stop caretaking the people who are don't need to be taken care of by us anymore. So we'll have Dr. Fjellstad on in February. And I do want to make sure that everybody knows about our upcoming healing weekend scheduled for the end of April here in Philadelphia. Some wonderful women will be coming here from all over the country, and I'd love for you to join us as we sit together and we bond and we heal and walk away from there feeling like new people on a good track. We'll have workshops on healing. We'll have bonding, friendships made. It's a wonderful weekend where you can go on your journey no matter what point you're at that journey, in the beginning, the middle, or well past it. There are people there at all different points who are willing to share their experiences with you. And like I say, it's the most memorable weekend that you'll have in a very long time. So I do want to apologize to my readers because I've gotten many emails this week about my postponed delayed newsletter. But to be honest with you, I was so sick that I never had a chance to finish everything. but it will be in the mail sometime in the next 2 weeks. I'll make it a January, February newsletter. And in that newsletter, you'll be reading the beautiful words of my guest from tonight. And her name is Kristen Galbley. I'm sorry, Kristen. And Kristen was here with us a couple months ago. And I had such a wonderful listening response and readership response to the article that we had in our newsletter. So I was thrilled that she was going to be able to join us again. So, Kristen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, you've made quite a splash in straight circles around the country. I know that I hear comments that you were coming on the show tonight from all kinds of groups saying, yeah, they read it, posted in this group, that group. So I'm really excited that you could be here because you were just so wonderful and so validating the last time you were on the show. And I have to really thank one of our members, Terry, for introducing your beautiful article that we read last time that really hit every emotional nerve I have, because I really felt that you're the first person who I felt a soul kinship to as far as your writing. It was just so moving to me. And I was so excited that you had another article that we're going to read tonight and that you can comment on. And I'm going to be the first one waiting for your book to buy it as you keep writing along, because your words are just so inspirational. And I guess it's just the way that you word them, that you have a flair just for that writing that just really hits people's hearts. So let's talk a little bit about this article before I read it. This is from last year. It's a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
It refers to James Baca, a New York City councilman, who came out
mm-hmm.
at that time on Twitter. What a way to come out on Twitter, right?
Right. It seems to be the way a lot of things are done lately.
You're not kidding. But, you know, I wonder if he told his wife first. I wonder if his wife found out he came out on Twitter. Yeah,
that's a really good question.
Yeah, I know when these guys are ready mm-hmm. to go, then they're just really ready to go without thinking about what any repercussions will be. But
mm-hmm.
tell me how you found out about it.
Well, I think it was on, it was an article in the New York Times. It was on
mm-hmm.
one of my social media feeds, and it mentioned that Councilman Baca had come out of the closet and that he'd come out on Twitter and that he'd received floods of support, which is great in a certain context. And what really struck me was that the last paragraph of the original article mentioned merely that he was getting a divorce. So the wife was almost a non-person in this article. And I thought it spoke to the sort of the current position that straight wives and straight husbands, straight spouses are in the sort of collective consciousness around coming out of the closet. It really is as if we are non-people. We don't exist. We are the sort of collateral damage of this process, and where the person who is celebrated, rewarded, called courageous is the person who's coming out of the closet, regardless of what has been left behind in the wake of that life of the closeted individual, and regardless of whatever the damage and the fallout is to the family, to the wife, to the husband, to the children. I thought it was a particularly disregarding way of essentially viewing the wife in that scenario. I doubt that the author of the article meant anything by it. I doubt that the author of the article even really knew that in saying so, in merely noting that the councilman was getting a divorce, that the wife was being, or that the author of the article was being particularly dismissive, that there's this whole other life that has been potentially, we don't know for sure, but possibly destroyed and traumatized by this activity. So that moment of just the mention of the wife, or the non-mention of the wife, was what prompted me to write this particular article on essentially the non-visibility of the straight spouse experience out there in the broader culture. There's so much focus on the spouse who's coming out of the closet, and there's no focus. And it's interesting how uncomfortable it makes people to talk about that there's a life that is damaged in the process of all of this. And so that's what prompted me to write the article.
And I'm so in tune to you as far as your feelings about being Miss Cellophane, for better lack of word, when it comes to the
perfect
situation, like in the show Chicago, Mr. Cellophane. I feel like
yes,
Miss Cellophane,
right,
people
through.
Just look right through us and they don't see us. We're the invisible mm-hmm. women, and that's why I really wanted to start a movement called Straight Wives Matter. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it would really take an initiative of thousands of women to stand up and say, my life is important and you're not recognizing what I've gone through and what I've sacrificed. I'm the real hero here, because I do
right.
admire men who do the right thing, but that doesn't necessarily make them a hero. It makes them do the right thing. The women
right.
who are just so greatly neglected, you know, who are looked on as victims. And I hate that word. When people
mm-hmm.
look at us as victims, I mean, even if we are victims among ourselves is one thing, but for people to
right.
look at us in a victim role, you know, people have contempt
mm-hmm.
for victims. People don't admire victims. I mean, I'd really
right.
rather look at us as heroes that were able to endure
mm-hmm.
all kinds of terrible things and trauma, leaving us,
mm-hmm.
you know, with all kinds of post-traumatic stress and all kinds of nervous conditions and holding the bag with the children and being a single mom and having to reshape our whole lives. And yet we get
mm-hmm.
very little recognition for this as far as, you know, the community at large. Everybody's just applauding the gay man. And it's very much
mm-hmm.
around the same time, I guess, last year, or maybe this was a little sooner, when Joel Grey came out, you know,
mm-hmm.
the performer on Broadway who in his 70s or 80s, and everybody was applauding him, and he was saying now how he's come to terms in his life, and he said, you know, the best years of his life were spent with his wife. Well, I wonder if they were really the best years of her life. I didn't hear anybody
right.
asking her. You know, he just made a statement, what a wonderful life he had with her. Well, I'm sure if you're with a straight wife who's always trying desperately to make you happy because she can't, naturally, they're going to be
right.
great years for you while you're out there doing whatever you want to do. And then you become
mm-hmm.
a hero after leaving her after 40 years, and you're the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't get it.
Something
right. is really
there's
distorted
a,
here.
Yes, there's a real I think that the sort of enthusiasm for supporting LGBTQ people in coming out of the closet and being authentically who they are
uh-huh.
creates a real blind spot for a lot of people. Of course we support LGBTQ people. Of course
uh-huh.
we want people to be authentically who they are. We want them to be authentically who they are from the get-go, from the beginning.
Right.
We want them to have the space and freedom to be who they are in the beginning. And I think there's a real blind spot that, well, we just celebrate LGBTQ people whenever they come out of the closet. And we have to realize that this is not a black and white situation where this is a 100% positive. Yes, please come out of the closet. Yes, please experience your own life authentically. Yes, please be who you are. And yet at the same time, we cannot afford to say, as straight spouses who have been the damage and the fallout from these kinds of marriages, we can't say that this is okay. We're not saying it's okay, but we've got to be louder, I think, about saying that this is not okay. What happens to us, what has happened to us, what we've endured, it's really quite shocking sometimes how the general idea is, well, aren't you happy for your spouse? They can be themselves now, and we get cast as the bitter discards of the marriage. And it's quite shocking, frankly, that that there isn't really a thought very much or very often for the fact that as a wife, we have spent an entire life buying into a life that we thought was real that is largely fictional. And that is a huge upending of our sense of reality. It's a tectonic shift underneath our feet where all of a sudden the ground is not stable anymore and isn't going to be stable for many years. And people have real trouble recognizing and real trouble seeing that that particular form of damage. It's almost like, well, what's the big deal? You know, it's just like any other divorce. Move on with your life. Get over it. And it's like, no. We're not only just recovering from a divorce, we're actually orienting our entire sense of reality after something like this. And when you say women, we women who survive these kinds of marriages and divorces are heroes, we really are, because the amount of psychological damage that is unseen is and runs so deep that shakes us to the very core of our foundation of our sense of self. A lot of people in a normal divorce aren't experiencing their fundamental sense of self be knocked off its axis. They're not necessarily experiencing being set adrift in sort of a zero gravity environment where we can't tell which end is up and which end is down. So I really think that recovering from that level of psychological upheaval and that level of psychological dishonesty, that level of gaslighting, as you prefer to say, it takes a Herculean effort to crawl out from that hole, to rewrite the ship, and to continue sailing. So we really have to give ourselves so much credit. We really have to give ourselves so much permission and space to take as long as we need to take and to go on this journey. Because as we saw with the article with Councilman Baca, that support is not necessarily going to come from the public sector. It may not come from our families. It may not come from, it's certainly not being acknowledged culturally right now. I think it's starting to. I mean, certainly the work of the Straight Spouse Network and the work of you, Bonnie, and several others are raising the profile of straight spouses. And I think there's more work to be done, because I think once we really have a sort of inescapable profile publicly, we'll be able to say and have people hear, this is not okay. What was done to us was not acceptable. It's not acceptable that we suffered this particular kind of damage. It's not acceptable that we were used in this capacity. I really come down on the I think my mantra is, it's not okay. It's just not okay.
Well, I think one of the problems is, Kristen, you tell me if you agree with this, that most of us, I really believe in my heart, were very pro-gay before we got married. And even after these marriages, most of us are very pro-gay. But it's almost as if you say anything about your gay husband, all of a sudden you're labeled as being homophobic, or as being anti-gay, or that you're, you know, they find fault with that, members of the gay community, because I know certainly I've been attacked, and believe me, I feel I'm the least homophobic person. I've been pro-gay my whole life. I had a daughter who was a lesbian who I fought for. You know, I'm very much in favor of gay rights, but as soon as you say something, right away, you're homophobic. And I think this is something that the gay community needs to be educated about. And they have to understand this has nothing to do with homophobia. It has to do with lies and deception, and that they have to be willing to also stand up and say this does not represent the gay community, that the gay community doesn't approve of this, instead of always looking to make heroes out of people who have done this. You know, to me, the real heroes are the people who had the same amount of pressure. And believe me, I'm very understanding as to why gay men get married. I counsel lots of gay men, and I do understand their struggle. But they don't have any more of a struggle than other gay men who never got married. Those men were also under the same pressures. They were being told the same things. You have, if you're gay, then you're damned. You know, they grew up with the same messages, but they didn't feel the need to have to go and get married. And I feel like it's just like a re-victimization. You know, they say they were victims of society, but they were making us victims of their victimization. You know, it's just not a matter that, you were a victim, so I understand why you did it. No, you were a victim. Now you made me a victim because you took, my life away from me, making me think it was going to be something that it never could be. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think there's a way in which this is excuse-making in the LGBT community, I have to say, I'm in the theater, I'm an artist, so I have a plethora of LGBT community, beloved friends and colleagues, and those who know my story personally do not agree with what my husband did. So I think similarly, there are a lot of straight people who are so eager and in a rage to be gay allies that they'll be some of the loudest people shouting down straight spouses if we express anger, if we express resentment, if we express rage at what happened to us. So I think that there's not a lot of you're right. There needs to be a better level of understanding, a bridging, hopefully, within the straight spouse community, straight wives, and the gay male community and the LGBT community about what this does to us. And hopefully then we have more allies as well on the LGBTQ side who can say to each other, hey, don't go get married. Don't go do this. You're going to really damage somebody. It's the way I think I phrased it with my ex-husband is I believe that his own self-loathing, his own closetedness, whether that was from just being in severe denial or that he knew but didn't want to be gay, that was an absolute product of homophobia within his own family. But in choosing to get married, in choosing to bring me into that situation, he then made me a victim of homophobia too. He didn't get to live an authentic life, but it wasn't for him to then essentially make it so that I couldn't live an authentic life either. So it's what happens is that these individuals who like my ex-husband, who was in the closet, to me it was an extreme sense of entitlement that enabled him to steal my life too, to actually think it would be acceptable to steal 10 years, 12 years of my life, as the entire duration that we were together, to rob me of the opportunity to be with a loving heterosexual husband who desired me, who wanted to have a sexual relationship with me, who wanted to be with me in all the ways that a loving husband would want to be with a wife, to leave me trying and begging and banging my head against a wall, trying to figure out which approach would crack open my husband so that we could actually have intimacy, emotional, physical, all of it. In choosing to marry me and in choosing to commandeer my life like that, he made the decision to spread the harm around instead of confining the harm of cultural homophobia society and the homophobia in his family, instead of confining that to just him. He made the decision to basically spread that harm around, to hurt somebody else in the process. And there are a lot of people who don't do that. You're absolutely right. It's funny. It's interesting from a timing perspective. I was listening to a podcast today. I don't know if you remember the Menendez brothers, who I think it was in the 80s or 90s.
Followed that whole trial every day.
Yep, they killed their parents.
I actually watched every day of that trial for both of them.
Yeah, and you know the podcast that I was listening to today, the host made the comment that. The Menendez brothers were abused. And he said, well, you know, a lot of people are abused and don't go and kill their parents, or are abused and don't go and then commit violent crimes. So I didn't follow that trial particularly closely, but I will say that there's a point in that. Because we have suffered something, because we've suffered an injustice, because we've suffered homophobia or a gay man or LGBTQ community has suffered homophobia, which I absolutely acknowledge and abhor, that doesn't mean that then you get to turn around and spread that horror, spread that suffering, spread that that harm further by damaging someone else and someone else's life. So there has to be an understanding, I think, and hopefully as we continue to speak out.
What you're saying, Kristen, you know, about the Menendez brothers, you're absolutely right that a lot of people are damaged and they don't go and kill their parents, but nobody looked at the Menendez brothers as heroes. You know, people, they went to jail, they're serving their life out there.
Right.
And nobody said, well, you guys, we understand you. Your parents were abusing you. That's good you killed them. Nobody was saying that. But
that's what people are
saying here, and that's the disconnect for me, why these men are heroes when, in fact, they're just doing the right thing. The heroes to me are the men who don't give in to the pressure. They say, I'm not going to take somebody down with me. I understand, and, you know, I also tell gay men, look, You don't have to come out of a closet. You don't even have to be in the closet. Nobody has to know your sexuality. You know, you don't have to advertise it. You don't have to march in gay parades to be gay. I know gay men who live quiet lives, and people don't, they don't discuss their sexual, you know, sexuality with people or their partnerships with people. It's not like you have one choice, either get married or come out. Those aren't the only two choices there. Right?
Absolutely. There's more than one way to exist in this world with a sexual orientation that is not mainstream, that is not heteronormative. And it is absolutely true that you're not a hero for a step for living by the basics of human decency and integrity. And the basics of human decency and integrity mean that you tell your spouse your orientation as soon as you either are questioning it or you know it. At the earliest possible moment, you tell your spouse what's going on with you sexually and sexual orientation-wise, because the spouse has a 100% right to know what kind of a marriage they're in and to make the decision, the autonomous decision of whether or not they want to stay. And I think for me personally, the biggest injury of my marriage was, quite frankly, the violation of consent that I experienced, because I was not allowed, I was not afforded the opportunity to consent to the kind of marriage I was in. I was in a mixed orientation marriage for 9 years. I was dating and engaged, recorded for 4 years before I got married. And that entire time, I never knew for sure. I had an intuition. I had inklings. I never found hard evidence. I'd asked him on occasion. There were always denials. And, of course, when that happens, as the wife, you feel guilty. You feel bad for making that accusation. You feel bad for doubting your spouse. I didn't find out for sure that he was gay until a year and a half ago, actually a year and 4 months ago. So when his second ex-wife contacted me and let me know for sure that he was gay and that he was coming out of the closet and they were divorcing. So there's a sense of the sense of violation of consent that I had lived all these years in a marriage that was broken. I could sense that something was off. I didn't leave because I'd, one, made a commitment and I'd honored it. And because I couldn't concretely put my finger on what was wrong, I couldn't, in my mind, add up a legitimate reason to leave. I couldn't, in my mind, get at why our marriage felt off and why it felt like I was sort of slowly drowning. And it wasn't dramatic. It wasn't like I was being beaten. It wasn't, which was the measure, of course, you know, for a lot of us women for a long time, it's like, well, I'm not being beaten, right? So because, you know, we have such low self-esteem and such a low self-worth that, you know, we settle for a lot less than what we're worth, right? And so it was kind of like, something's off, but I can't put my finger on it. And of course, when you're living in that ether of doubt and questioning, it's very easy to flip from, well, something's off, I can't put my finger on it, I must be crazy. There must be something wrong with me. I'm adding this up right, or I'm adding this up wrong. I know my husband. He's a good guy. He's a nice guy. He's a low-key guy. I can't tell you how many mental gymnastics I did in order to add it up so that I was wrong and he was fine. And even to the point where 2 years after my divorce, I was still trying to make him the good guy, still trying to think well of him, still trying to make him out to be poor guy. You know, I just, there was something flawed in me that I couldn't stay with him. Something wrong with me that I had to get out of that marriage. Still trying to say things like, you know, I wish him well. I really hope he has a successful and happy life. That was before I even got in touch with the rage, even before I got in touch with the sense that I had been really harmed, that consent had been violated on a massive level. And we haven't even touched on the sexual wounding, which is such a core piece of our value as women and as human beings, right? Like, the sexual rejection is one of the most intimate ways a human being can possibly be rejected. It's one of the most damaging ways that you can reject another human being. And to let that sort of rejection continue day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, and to never give an explanation, to never let your straight wife off the hook, to allow her, to even encourage her to add it up so that she's the problem, so that she doesn't come sniffing around you, you know, is an act of real psychological cruelty. It's an act of, if at the very least, it's tremendous cowardice on the part of a gay husband, and at the worst, it's mendacious cruelty to allow her to stew in that place, that horrible place of, you know, I'm undesirable. My husband doesn't want to touch me. How do I fix this? How do I get this? What am I doing wrong?
I just want to mention that, mm-hmm. you know, in my newsletter that will be coming out, you know, in the next, you know, 2 weeks, one of the articles mm-hmm. I written is a response to a gay man who I've been corresponding with. And he's very, very sympathetic to a straight wife. He's never been married, but he was reading my stuff. And, you know, we were corresponding back and forth. And he kind of came up with the conclusion that women are definitely victims, but so are the men. You know, we're both victims. Mm-hmm. And I thought about what he said, and I, you know, responded to him, and I wanted to print the response. But one of the things, part of it, I'll just read this to you, you know, mm-hmm. as I'm saying why the victimization is different. I said, I understand why mm-hmm. these gay men get married. But I don't think they understand what they do to an innocent person when they do that. The same sense of societal rejection that he, the gay husband, feels is the same kind of personal rejection she, the wife, feels from him. I don't know mm-hmm. why you're. I don't know if you're in a relationship or not, but I assume that at some point you've been in one. Imagine how you would feel if your partner kept sexually rejecting you and then started blaming you for smelling bad or having such bad breath or being too dull in bed. Worse yet, mm-hmm. what if he told you your penis size wasn't large enough for him? What if he started mm-hmm. to criticize how you look, how you clean, how you cook, and anything else he could criticize, because the truth was he had a lover he wanted to be with, and it wasn't you? Then you mm-hmm. may have a slight insight into how women feel. Women love their mm-hmm. gay husbands and marry them for that reason. They don't stop loving them when they start feeling the sexual and emotional rejection. Rather, they mm-hmm. try harder and harder to be better wives. You know, and then mm-hmm. I go on and, you know, give them other points of view. But I think that falls very much in tune to what you're saying with the sexual rejection. You know, if they put themselves in our place and see how sexual rejection feels, especially mm-hmm. when they have lovers and eventually they do have that rejection, then maybe they have an idea. But I want to go on right. while we have time so I can read your mm-hmm. article that you wrote, which yes. really just pounded it once again. And this is about James Vacca, a New York City councilman who represents the 36th District of Brooklyn, came out as a gay man on Twitter this week. According to the New York Times, the post was marked with hashtags out and proud, coming out, and was greeted with a flood of online support and praise from city and state political figures. It is undoubtedly a good thing for Councilman Vacca to be out of the closet, and I congratulate him on his choice to finally live his truth with dignity. Yet an important part of this story is being overlooked, his straight spouse, his wife. While the congratulations and public support for Mr. Vacca pour in on social media, his wife will not get the spotlight or the same level of public support. Not even close. In fact, she receives no mention in this article. It is merely noted that Councilman Vacca is getting a divorce. In this story, she's not even a person. But she is a person in the story, and she has every bit as significant as part as Councilman Vacca. Hopefully, if this experience, being married to a closeted gay man, is as traumatic for her as it was for me, my ex-husband is now out after 2 failed marriages to women, she will receive a lot of support, although that support will likely be privately and discreetly shared away from the op-eds in the New York Times. Before we jump to praise and congratulate Congressman Vacca for his bravery upon coming out, I would ask him a few questions. How long has he known he was gay? Or when did he first begin grappling with his sexuality? Did he confide in his wife immediately as soon as there was a question? Or did he dissemble, equivocate, and lie to keep her from intuiting the truth? In short, did he do harm to her to keep himself safe? You see, many gay spouses spend years intentionally lying to straight spouses, covering up the truth, throwing up smoke screens in large ways and small, so as not to be discovered. There has been gaslighting, script flipping, evasion, denial, diversion, and deception. Much of this consciously and intentionally done. These tactics designed to throw the strayed spouse off the trail severely damage the strayed spouse's sense of reality, sanity, and often their sense of self. Lying in denial on this scale and in a relationship this intimate takes an enormous effect, and therefore the damage done to the victim's spouse, yes, victim, and the sense of betrayal is proportionally enormous, especially when the blame for the lack of physical intimacy in the marriage is laid at the strayed spouse's doorstep, as it is often to deflect suspicion. It is crazy-making. In the face of such Herculean efforts to make the strayed spouse doubt herself instead of the gay husband, she will begin to doubt everything else, including her own sanity, her goodness as a person, her ability to assess reality, her capacity for trust. The very air in her home doesn't seem to be made of oxygen because it is made of a lie. It is the carbon monoxide of lies. You can't see it, smell it, taste it, but it's still there, killing you slowly. You can intuit something is off, but you can't quite put your finger on it. And when you get warm, you find gay porn or some other evidence, your spouse will tell you are so, so, so cold. I don't know what you're talking about. It's not mine. You're crazy. Because they are still in the closet and they were still using you as its door. It's a personal betrayal on the most intimate of human levels. And yes, this is a high level of using another human being. And no, no one gets to do that. While the reasons for the gay spouse's hiding and deception are complex and nuanced, and often understandable, they are not noble, and they are never excusable. And sometimes they are downright unconscionable. If two people are in a mixed orientation marriage, then both people in that marriage have the right to know that. There is no excuse for robbing someone else of the ability to consent to the kind of marriage they are in. When one spouse unilaterally decides the other spouse does not need to know, then they are in a mom, then they have unjustly robbed their spouse of informed consent. From personal experience, being unable to consent is the kind of marriage I was in constituted in a deep violation of trust and bodily sovereignty that took nearly a decade to come back from. I would never have consented to marry him if I had known that my ex-husband was gay. It was a violation of my sexual agency. I would never have consented to have sex with him had I known he was gay. It was a violation of human decency. I was deprived of the potential for a loving, sexually fulfilling, mutually nourishing marriage with a straight man for 2 decades. The consequences of these violations of the straight spouse's life are severe PTSD, major depression, anxiety disorders, a deep sense of alienation from the self and from reality. And when all else comes crashing down, when he finally has the courage to come out, a deep sense of betrayal because your whole life together was a lie. I know none of the private details of Councilman Vaca's life and marriage to his wife. However, we have to stop seeing only the side of the story that indiscriminately celebrates a gay spouse when he or she finally has the courage to come out. Before that, there was a husband or wife who may not have been traumatized, cruelly, sexually rejected, deprived of consent, gaslighted, or used as a prop in a play of the gay spouse's creation, or worse, used as a broodmare to produce children. I promise you it is beyond devastating to find out you, as a human being, were merely used as a prop, a bit of set dressing, a trompe-l'oeil, a beard. It is beyond enraging to learn, as we eventually do, that someone you loved and trusted felt your life could be sacrificed for their illusion, a mere currency they exchanged to buy and build a decoy life. It is a kind of psychological rape that someone felt entitled to unilaterally decide what kind of marriage you should be in, and you weren't given a choice because of the fear, legitimate though that fear may have been. That a choice was taken away from you, each successive year you were kept in the dark, and deceived about the kind of marriage you had. Each successive year, you did not have the knowledge and did not give permission. Your spouse commandeered your life and didn't tell you what you were being used for. Gay columnist and sex advice podcaster Dan Savage is famously unsympathetic to closeted people, stating about one closet case in one advice column, he is being dishonest and his chicken shit closed case games require you to be dishonest too. This is what many straight spouses experience, only without their knowledge or permission. This is not about demonizing closeted gay people. Many straight spouses stay quiet about their pain and trauma precisely because we don't want to hurt or offend our LGBT loved ones and friends. And we don't seem to want, and we don't want to seem too angry or too unsympathetic to the gay spouse's coming out journey. This has to stop. It is nothing less than a form of violence to a soul to lie to another person so thoroughly. A gay spouse is not excused because they are a persecuted minority. And yes, they are a persecuted minority. You are not granted permission to lie to someone on the most intimate of human levels, to shatter someone else's life because yours is hard. This is an acknowledgement that when wherever homophobia permeates a society, forcing people into a closet so deep and so dark that they themselves cannot bear to leave it, and will conscript non-consenting partners to maintain it, not one, not even straight spouses, are left unscathed. There is a real and lasting trauma. Let us acknowledge it. Oh, that is just so beautiful, Kristen.
Oh, thank you.
I feel like crying after I read that. I mean, it is just so beautifully stated.
Thank you.
And it's also true. I mean, everything you say in here, you know, just gets to the soul of the whole situation of how we feel as straight wives that only you can really express with these words of yours. You just know how to hit on every nerve that we're feeling.
Yeah. There's real damage to the feminine spirit, real damage to the feminine spirit of a woman who has been in a marriage like this. And it takes a lot to come back from. And I want to be clear, it is absolutely 100% possible to come back from something like this. Absolutely, as you know, I mean, and part of the coming back process for me personally was eventually being able to write and express my, I mean, you can hear in my writing, you can hear a tone of anger, you can hear a tone of pushback, hear a tone of, not going to stand for this, not going to say that this is okay. And I think that that's incredibly important because that pushback, that us being willing to stand and say, hey, this happened to me was enraging and righteously so, that this happened to me was not okay. And I stand firm in that. I will shout that from the rooftops. It was not okay. Being able to say that to ourselves over and over and over again is the building blocks of self-esteem, the building blocks of self-worth, that we were worth more than having our lives commandeered and used. And I do use some harsh terms in here. I didn't have children with my ex-husband, thank God. I mean, I had a very strong feeling that I should not have children with him somewhere deep inside of me, and I obeyed that. I also am not a mother, so I never did have children even after him. But there's a sense of I've read so many women. It's not that I don't want to suggest by any means that women who did have children with their gay husbands regret having their children or anything like that. They love their children. They love their families. Absolutely. But sometimes there's a sense of having been used as a broodmare to get a family.
And I always tell women when they tell me that the wonderful thing that came out of their marriage is that they had these wonderful children. And I said, yes, it is true. Nobody's taking that away from you. But chances are you had a straight husband and had wonderful children with a lot less problems and complications than you have now. Because when you have children, then there's always a lot more problems than when you don't. And especially so many of these children are really wounded as they're growing up because many of them become the keeper of the secrets. They find out before the mothers know. Many of them find their father's porno on the computer, and they're very torn. They go to their fathers to confront them. And I've had children, adult children, tell me that they were torn because the father said, well, if you tell your mother, it's going to end our marriage, and then you're going to feel bad that, you know, you caused it. So rather than take responsibility, they place it on their children. And not only that, but when you have children in these marriages, they know something is off. Because they see enough television to see how people should be acting when they love each other. And I always tell women that you will leave this legacy behind for your children. You know, it's really interesting that when I was studying child abuse many, many, many years ago, and I was doing public speaking for it, And when I first learned the statistic that like 82% of all child abusers were abused themselves when they were children, and I used to think, well, how could that possibly be? If you're beaten, why would you want to do this to your child knowing what it feels like? And then, of course, mm-hmm. I was just, you know, in school learning back then, and I learned about learned behavior. And that's mm-hmm. what you're doing to your children when you stay in these loveless, sexless marriages. You're making them think this is how marriage should be. So that mm-hmm. when they find someone, and I always say to women, let this be your gauge. If your daughter came to you and she said to you, Mom, I'm so excited. I met a guy. I'm going to marry him, and he's just like Dad. He treats me just mm-hmm. like Dad treats you. Would you say to her, oh, honey, I'm so happy for you? Or would you tell mm-hmm. her, run in the other direction? And I say, if mm-hmm. you would tell her to run, then you need to run. Because mm-hmm. she is going to model herself after you. And if she sees that you're willing to settle for so little, she will feel right. that this is what she needs to do too. So, it's, right. you know, like I said, you haven't had to deal with all the children issues, but you certainly mm-hmm. acknowledge them, and it's so true that there's just so many more problems that we have in these, what you call moms, I call them mismarriages, because they're mm-hmm. a mistake. You know, you make a mm-hmm. mistake, but that's the great thing. You can fix it. You don't have to stay in it and linger in it forever. But do you mm-hmm. feel that the longer you stay, the harder it is to walk away from it because you're just so beaten down?
I can speak from my personal experience. By the time I left, I was a shell of myself, a mm-hmm. real shell of myself. And it was to a point where I was running for my life. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know that. And the way I left my marriage was a bit scandalous. I separated from my husband. I started a relationship with a straight man. It was an absolute light going on in the dark, like, oh, my God, this is what it is supposed to be like. But I was still in such a state of gaslighted confusion that I actually went back to my husband to try and see if we could go to marital counseling and work it out. And during that period of marital counseling, when, of course, I told him that I'd had a relationship with someone else during the separation, he had convinced me that I was such a whore and that I was such a slut and that I was the wrong one, that for a really, really solid 2 months, I believed that, and my head was cowed. The yoke was going back on. I was going back in the corral, and I had handed him a stick to beat me with for the rest of our lives. And I had also handed him his free pass because now he realized that he had control of me through publishing far and wide that I had been an adulterer, which I wasn't. We were separated, and I'd also told him what mm-hmm. I was going to do. I was going to date other people, but that didn't stop him from publishing far and wide that I was an adulterer. So in the eyes of my family and our friends who he told, I was absolutely shamed and cowed, and I was about to let the noose come back around my neck when a moment happened where some strength rose in me, and I said to him in a marital counseling session, I know I'm a good person, and I no longer care if you think I am or not. And Bonnie, the rage on his face, it was like he'd lost control of me in that moment. And he uh-huh. was going to be able to control the narrative for the rest of our lives, because with me having done this horrible thing, then he was always going to be able to put the blame back on me and always deflect from his gayness, always deflect from his homosexuality because he had a cheating, whoring wife. And I, in that moment, that spark of strength, that spark of, no, I will not go back in shackles again. And it was almost unconscious, Bonnie, because I hadn't even put together, you know, with the long arc of perspective in 10 years since my divorce, I have figured a lot out about what went wrong and how it went south and what actually was happening there. At that time, I was groping around for a flashlight in the dark. So the fact that some spark in me was strong enough to say no and then to actually tell him I wanted a divorce, it's almost miraculous. And I attribute it to the fact that each of us has a flame inside of us that is unextinguishable. And you asked if we're the longer that we're in these marriages, is it harder to get out? I would say potentially yes, but that spark, that flame of no, I'm not going to take this anymore. No, I am worth more than this. No, I have got to live again. I am dying here. It can fire up at any moment. And I just want to encourage your listeners to grab for that flame of fire, anger, rage, whatever it is, whatever that spark is, and let that fuel you at least a little bit until you can get someplace more secure ground underneath your feet. Because I know that when you're transitioning, especially if you're freshly transitioning out of one of these marriages, it's just so hard to know which to paddle, you know, to push for the surface, to kick for the surface and to breathe free air. When you've been drowning for so long, it's almost like, oh my gosh, what does real freedom taste like? What does it smell like? Yeah, it definitely got harder and harder for me to leave, but at the same time, I think I was so far at the bottom of and so bereft and so broken by the time I was ready to leave that just it was sort of the last spark of my autonomy and my will saying, no, we're not going to die like this. So, that languaging may sound melodramatic, but I say it in all seriousness because that marriage was killing me. It was emotionally, psychologically, in every way, burying me. And so,
no, doesn't sound melodramatic to me at all. I think that all of us go through this. All of us feel as if we become different people because we do have to in order to survive. And you're going to stay in these marriages, you totally lose who you are because you're becoming someone based on a fallacy to start with. So you really don't know who you're becoming because you're just trying to please someone who can never be pleased. And as you were saying, you internalize it and you start feeling guilty and maybe you're not good enough. And just to add to the children aspect, which, you know, I know that maybe it's hard for you to relate to, but I know me as a mother, and so the other mothers listening can also relate to this. You also question yourself as a mother, because if you're not good enough as a wife, are you being good enough as a mother? And a lot of these men are very manipulative, and they'll say to the women, you're not good as a wife, you're not good as a mother, and you start doubting yourself so much. And I think that that's what you express so beautifully, is that the pain, that the internal pain it does to you on a daily basis, of never feeling that you're good enough. I don't think people acknowledge this for us. And I'd love for somebody to say, you know what? These women have suffered, and they are strong women. They need to be praised for what they've done instead of just ignored or overlooked or minimized. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel we are, Kristen. I feel we're minimized.
Yes.
And that's why we really do need a Straight Wives Matter kind of program, where women can stand up and say, I am a straight wife, and not feel embarrassed or feel intimidated or overlooked or feel that people are going to laugh at you. I mean, if we have to feel that way about ourselves, we can never expect the public to change their opinion about us. Do you agree with that?
I do agree. And I think that I think one of the key things is where I'm getting to in my personal journey is by saying it publicly more often, and it's been a challenge for me too, and a nascent challenge, because as I mentioned, you know, I've only known for a little over a year for sure that my ex-husband was gay, and that fueled a revolution in me over the last year when I finally put all the pieces together of exactly what happened to me, and holy cow, and oh my God, and no. I have started to find the strength to say more publicly and more loudly, this is what happened to me. This was not okay. It is possible to survive. But what happens to straight spouses in terms of what happens publicly to us, how we are overlooked, it's almost as if, you know, it really is almost as if, Bonnie, sometimes when people champion the gay spouse coming out and they champion and they cheer and they say, oh, what a hero and how brave you are. And when we push back and say, yeah, there was real damage done here, real harm done here, not okay, it's almost as if by not acknowledging that and by becoming angry with us or calling us homophobes or whatever it is, it's almost as if they're saying, well, you should have been happy to let your life be used. Mm-hmm. It should have been okay with you to let your life be used. This poor person, they were a victim of homophobia. So you should have voluntarily sacrificed your life to help this person out. It's like they don't understand that that's kind of what they're intimating. They don't understand that it's a very unconscious piece. There's a real blind spot there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other reason is this form of abuse is so psychological. I in the article that you read, I call it the carbon monoxide of poisons, because you know we don't come to work with black eyes. I mean, some of us do. Yeah, absolutely. Gay husbands can be physically abusive as well, but for a lot of us, the abuse is psychological, and these wounds are not. It takes us a long time to figure out something went wrong, let alone, or something is going on, or something is not right, or something is off. It takes so long to be able to put into place an accurate picture of what really is going on. Us a long time to do that. And then you have the people out there in the broader culture who aren't even attempting to try and understand this from our experience, and almost resenting the fact that we have legitimate anger about this, that we have legitimate rage about this, that we have legitimate grievance about this, and that we're going to say so. And so I think if I can, you know, encourage your listeners to, as I have only begun to do recently in the last year, so I'm just beginning this, to write about it, to speak about it, to, however timidly, if it's your social media circle, or that was a really risky thing for me to do too. I actually posted this article about Councilman Vaca on my Facebook page, knowing that a ton of my LGBTQ friends were going to see it and read it. And I have to say, I have some of the best gay friends in the world. I've got great gay actor friends who were super supportive of me and who chimed in with a lot of really insightful stuff and a lot of really supportive stuff. So I want us to be encouraged too that we do actually have gay allies out there. We just have to get louder so that we can hear them, so that they can be able to respond to us. So let's get louder and write, even if it's just for you in your journal, and talk and speak. And little by little, I think that by speaking about it, by talking about it, by coming out of the closet, we build our own self-esteem. We validate our own experience. We say, no, this happened. This was real. This was not okay. And I'm not going away. And that is part of it's a cycle that builds self-worth, that fuels the recovery, that it's a rolling cycle that continually builds ourselves back up to where we maybe were before we were married, or even better yet, into an authentic self that we've never been at before at this part in our lives, because we are slowly beginning to speak and use our voices.
Well, Kristen, as we're winding down to the end of the show, I want to thank you so much. I know you're in the middle of a major move in your life, and you took the time to come here and to just inspire me and thousands of women who listen to this show every month. And I just can't thank you enough, and I just hope you're going to keep writing, and that you're someday going to have a book that I can help you get published and distributed and get the word out there to acknowledge the pain that we're going through. Because I think that women, the most important message you're getting across is all these feelings you have, you must acknowledge them, and they're legitimate. Don't let anybody try to minimize what you've gone through or make it like it's a poo-poo, big deal. It is a big deal. And once you acknowledge it, then you're able to move on. But when you keep overlooking it or excusing it, then you're never going to truly heal. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. We have to get real with what happened to us. We have to get real with what was done. We have to get real with the depth of the damage. I'm not encouraging people to see themselves as more damaged than they actually are, but we do have to acknowledge what happened. And I would love you know, if your listeners want to message me or anything, perhaps they can message me and ask me questions through you, Bonnie, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Absolutely. If any questions at all, write to me, and I'll be happy to forward to Kristen, and she'll be happy to be in touch with you. Kristen, I love you. Thank you so much for being part of this network and just for spreading sanity throughout the world. And I really look forward to having you back here soon again, one
Thank
way or
you,
another.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's mutual. Thank you.
All right. Take care. And to all our listeners, have a wonderful week. Love you all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.